Chapter 7. Aspen. As soon as the giant viper stilled, Aspen released his mental grip on the climbing rose canes that had been constricting the beast. His life sense clearly showed Rouge's cascade of numbers flickering, and there were gaps of numbers so fuzzy he couldn't tell what they were among the ones and zeros that he was used to. He raced toward where he had last seen the girl, her slim body slamming hard into a wall before sliding down limply. He'd seen the Mombele tear itself from the snake, so he knew she had been aware enough to call for her ferocious weapon, but he feared what he would find nonetheless. When he arrived at her side, Rouge's eyes were closed, and only the steady rise and fall of her chest reassured him that his life sense hadn't failed him, and she was still alive. Her numbers, in fact, were growing steadier, and the errors less frequent, so he suspected that either her traveler ability to heal quickly on her own was already doing its work, or she'd managed to drink a healing potion. Kneeling beside her, he brushed bloodied braids back from her forehead, wincing at the large contusion swelling there. She had slammed face first into the wall. Her nose was clearly broken, and the knot on her head was the size of a goose egg. He opened his senses wider, and saw that she had numerous bruises and lacerations all over her body, and two of her vertebrae were cracked. He focused on the broken bones and the head injury first, painfully aware that he had drained even his vast reserves of magic to their limits. He had been expending mana like water since they entered the dungeon, between trying to command the serpents, healing the injuries sustained by their party, and then growing and controlling the gargantuan rosebush. Beneath his hands, bones knit and bruises shrank, revealing the familiar pretty features of his young friend. One curly lashed eye blinked, and then the other, and Rouge looked up at him from brilliant hazel eyes. "Oh man, thanks, Aspen. That really sucked." She sat up slowly, groaning and rubbing gingerly at her left arm, which bore the bulk of the bruising he hadn't yet repaired. "I haven't had a proper unconscious debuff in a while, but it was actually kind of nice to just watch the counter tick down on it, and know that." She grimaced and shook her head, looking relieved as her bruises continued to vanish beneath his healing touch. "Well, anyway, it's nice for things to just be normal, I guess." Aspen wasn't quite certain what the girl meant, but he did know that he was coming perilously close to completely draining his mana, which would likely result in his own unconsciousness, and this was still not a safe place to be unaware. Plus, he hadn't checked in with the other members of their party, though his life sense showed that none of them were as badly injured as Rouge had been. Reaching out, he helped pull Rouge to her feet, smiling at her reassuringly when she looked at him questioningly. "I need to check with everyone else. You'll heal on your own in a few minutes, now that we're out of combat. Besides," he tilted his head toward the huge serpentine corpse occupying most of the room behind him, "isn't there something you need to do?" The elf's hazel eyes lit with an avaricious gleam, and he would have sworn her long pointed ears twitched in excitement. "Oh yeah, loot. Thanks, Aspen." She took a step toward the remains of their enemy, but paused. Her eyes went a little distant, and in his mind he heard her ask, "Silas?" The little bat answered a moment later, sounding slightly peevish. "I think I sprained a wing, but I'm all right. Aspen, come and get me, and Rouge, don't do anything interesting without me." Rouge grinned in relief, then raised a hand to wave at Aspen as she dashed off toward the cadaver. "Sure, Silas. Of course I won't." 10 minutes later, everyone was gathered in front of the door through which they had entered. Aspen had healed them all as much as he could, focusing on more serious injuries that would take a long time to recover on their own, and they were now exhausted and battered, but whole. Doombloom, who looked pale and miserable, spoke first. "We need to get out of here, and quickly. If I log out while we're in here, I'll be sent to my respawn point, which is not nearby. You guys really need to build a temple, and soon." Aspen nodded, making a mental note that a temple, which counted as a community building, would indeed be an excellent choice for one of their first buildings. Quite aside from the benefits it would afford his own people, it would allow the travelers to respawn here, instead of in whatever distant place they had last saved. "Doombloom, head librarian, you two probably know best what we're looking for. What does this dungeon heart look like?" He looked between the two named, though it didn't escape his notice that the head librarian didn't quite meet his eyes. Doombloom sighed. "I doubt my experience will help much. Everything I know about dungeons has been turned upside down in this place." She ran a hand through her pale hair in frustration. "I don't even know for certain what will happen if I log out. Maybe I'll go to respawn, but maybe my corpse will just stand here until that stupid snake respawns instead." The head librarian shook his head. the snake will not respawn. It is probably the same creature who was once summoned by the former master of this place. Without a master, a different serpent may rise to take its place, but this creature no longer has the near immortality that its position as the final challenger once granted it. It is well and truly dead. The old man stopped speaking, and shockingly, it was William who spoke up. The fructipere had spent the battle hiding in the hallway, as Aspen had instructed him, but he still looked ashamed, and his voice was barely above a whisper. Ah, it will be some object that represents the spirit of this place. It can only be found if the final challenge is defeated, but ahem, the vampire glanced sidelong at the head librarian. If there is no master, the dungeon seat itself should be there, and can be taken by any successful challenger. Aspen frowned a bit. So what happens if we take this seed? The two old men locked eyes, and finally the head librarian sighed, his shoulders slumping slightly. Fine then. He looked over at Aspen. The first sapient to touch the dungeon seed will become the new master. The dungeon will be reformed to their specifications, and anyone else inside will be ejected while the new dungeon stabilizes. Aspen's brows shot up. And you didn't think to mention this before? The head librarian's eyes closed briefly, and when they opened again, he almost seemed a different person. Gone was the slightly absent-minded old man who cared for nothing but books and knowledge. No, there was some driving force behind that gaze now. This man had some purpose, and his determined icy blue gaze said it was one for which he would do anything. I told you that the dungeons have been simplified by the gods since the coming of the travelers. Long ago, the dungeon masters protected the greatest knowledge and skills, allowing anyone worthy to access them, and ensuring that no one person or group could hold too much power. A master deserving of the role would rise, and when they were ready to step down, they would choose the best and brightest of those who came to challenge the dungeon as their successor. But then Lich Lord Akuji came. He wished to become the master of the undead dungeon, but the master there saw his foul heart and refused him. In retribution, Akuji learned how to kill the master, but he had become too powerful in the greater world by then, and instead of taking the dungeon as his own, accepting the restrictions placed on the masters by the gods, he abandoned it, stealing the dungeon seed and leaving the dungeon to slowly die. He waved around at the decaying room in which they stood. Over time, he ravaged dungeon after dungeon, killing the masters and their minions, stealing their treasures and secrets, and leaving them to fall fallow. As a lich, his stamina is all but bottomless, so he had no need for the boons granted by defeating this small dungeon, and it was one of the last to fall. He didn't even bother to come himself, but simply sent some of his servants to kill the master. Those servants failed in their mission, but did manage to seal off the dungeon, which was good enough for Akuji, who was embroiled in yet another war at the time. Shaking his head, the old man continued. Few records remain of that time, but they found their way to my library, and I dared to hope that perhaps the seed and the dungeon might still be here. Aspen tugged at the brim of his hat. Is that why you came here? Why you helped me? You knew I was coming here, and you hoped that if the Lord of the North owed you a favor, he might grant you what, a dungeon of your own? I never thought you were one to seek personal power, but you did all this in hopes of becoming a dungeon master? What would you say if I denied you? The blue eyes flicked to the pouch at Aspen's waist, and he said, would you deny me? Have I not paid enough? Aspen's hands clenched at his sides as he fought the urge to touch the pouch again, feel the reassuring solidity of the thing resting within. He kept his voice quiet. Your friendship was enough. Your aid when I needed it, when no one else could or would assist me, was enough. All you had to do was ask. The head librarian closed his eyes at the betrayal in Aspen's voice. I couldn't risk your refusal. A dungeon is power, and you might have others in mind who would use that power to more directly benefit you. And you will not use that power to help me. I cannot. I have a prior loyalty, and that loyalty must come before any other. At this point, Doom Bloom, who was nearly panting and was leaning on her sister's shoulder for support, burst out, I don't care. Find the stupid egg or seed or whatever it is, and just get moving. I'm on my final debuff, and if we don't leave soon, I'm going to just keel over and die, and I swear to God, I will haunt you both even after I resurrect. Rouge stared up at her much taller sister in shocked concern, then looked back at Aspen. We really need to get moving. HL can fill us in on the whole spiel later, but right now we need to plant this seed or whatever. Kor struck the ground with a hard hoof, digging a gouge into the already torn-up dirt where Aspen's rose had grown. "Tell Sarave," the goat said, "to just give you the rock, Aspen. Obviously, none of us is getting it." He sounded peevish but resigned, and Aspen relayed his words, though his eyebrows nearly touched the brim of his hat as he did so. The goblin woman hesitated, large yellow eyes going from Aspen to the head librarian, but eventually she reached into the pouch at her waist and gingerly pulled out a blue-black stone. The thing was the size of her fist, and as Aspen watched, part of the clear blue crystalline structure that seemed to grow from the smooth black base shifted, moving to a new position on the rock. Decision made, Sarave held it out and dropped it into Aspen's palm with visible relief. The head librarian gaped, his usual all-knowing veneer cracking. "What? How did you get that? You've had it the whole time?" Sarave, Kor, and William exchanged glances, but it was the goblin who spoke, her liquid accent heavier than usual. "Nuisance found it, and Kor brought it to Sumi. We decided it was best to wait until Aspen returned, and let him decide what to do with it. I believe Sumi knows more about it than she told me, but she is not here, so," she shrugged. Aspen rubbed the back of his neck with his free hand, staring up at the ceiling as if to ask Gina for guidance. When nothing happened, he simply looked down and handed the stone to the head librarian. The old man stared down at the kaleidoscopic seed, and slowly, an expression of wonder and relief suffused his face. He looked up at Aspen, and his voice was choked. "You don't know. I haven't explained. How can you even trust me?" Aspen set his hand on the little man's shoulder. "I know you hate Akuji, and you have aided me again and again, at great risk to yourself. Whatever you need this stone for, I believe it will not harm me or those I'm trying to protect." Now he glanced at Doombloom, who was swaying on her feet, eyes closed and expression pained. "Let's build a dungeon."